Davis.
Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Tuesday, March 26th. Thank you for your patience. There was a slight delay as we made sure that we could accommodate the needs of various people who would like to testify on the two bills in front of us for a public hearing this morning. We will take the bills in the order that the agenda was published. I'm opening hearing on House Bill 3133, LRO.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3133 is a bill that's making changes to an income tax credit, and this is one of the income tax credits where taxpayers can make donations to a specified account, receive a credit for those donations, and then those donations are then used to fund a program. So the House Bill 3133 is relating to the individual development account. So it's increasing the overall annual limit from $7.5 million to $15 million for all tax credits that are allowed to taxpayers in any tax year. And then it's also increasing the credit percentage from 70% to 100% of the taxpayer's donation amount. So when a taxpayer makes a donation under current law right now, they would get a tax credit equal to up to 70% of that donation. This bill would move that up to 100%. The modifications are applicable to tax years 2019 through 2021. There are some other changes to the individual development account program, the IDA program. Some modifications in this bill, including eliminating a requirement of the legislature to periodically review. Again, this program is a tax credit that does come up for its review in part prior to its sunset. So that is done by the Legislative Revenue Office. You'd be getting a report on this prior to the next upcoming long legislative session. And it takes effect 91st day, sine die. So again, the changes to the credit are begin with this tax year, 2019 through 2021, which is when the credit is scheduled to sunset under current law right now.
Thank you. We have several people signed up to testify. There are no particular panels that have self-identified, but it does help things go a little faster if we have people come up together. So I would like to hear first Carlos David Garcia and Janet Bird.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Findley, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee. My name is Carlos David Garcia, and I'm the Director of Economic Opportunity at Neighborhood Partnerships. Neighborhood Partnerships is a statewide nonprofit organization that works through policy and program delivery to increase opportunity for Oregonians, particularly those with low incomes. In my role at Neighborhood Partnerships, I have the privilege to lead a team that oversees the Oregon Individual Development Account Initiative, or IDAs, on behalf of the state. Through our work on IDAs, we have learned that small amounts of investments and savings, coupled with the information and know-how of managing one's finances, increases our savers' skills that lead to long-term positive financial behaviors. This improves people's lives by increasing their stability, by building a foundation for economic growth and opportunity for our savers and their families. Today, we know that far too many of our neighbors are struggling financially. According to the latest Prosperity Now scorecard that assesses the state's ability to provide opportunities to build financial stability, Oregon has some work to do. We believe Oregon can and should do better, and we need a range of strategies and tools to address these disparities. One proven tool are IDAs. IDAs are a match savings account that helps savers build the financial skills they need while they save toward a defined goal, and for which every dollar that they save is typically matched by three additional dollars by the initiative. It's this investment and incentive that facilitates our savers to take concrete steps towards getting their finances in order, thus improving their financial health. The program requires monthly saving deposits, which help create a habit of savings. By working alongside an IDA provider or a coach, the savers are provided the information and education they need to help build their financial decision-making skills. And together, they develop action plan that meets the saver where they're at, outlining specific next steps for their reaching their goals. And lastly, by reaching their goals, savers are able to attain an asset. It's this asset accumulation that provides our savers the security and space they need to look ahead, to plan for the future, and to reach their full potential. The three main saving categories for IDAs are purchasing your first home, fulfilling educational goals, and developing a small business. Savers can also pursue other approved asset classes, which are included in the handout, What Are IDAs, that we submitted into testimony. But we don't do this work alone. We partner with 10 different direct grantees, which are community-based nonprofits that provide and offer IDAs throughout the state of Oregon. On the back of the one pager, you'll see an IDA provider map that shows the distribution of these 10 grantees. Two of these grantees are networks, meaning that they administer funding to additional partners that also provide IDAs. In total, the IDAs are provided or are offered at more than 75 nonprofit organizations across the state. The full list of IDA providers can be found on page 45 of our annual evaluation report, which we submit into testimony. Thanks to the great work of our partners, we are able to reach deep into Oregon communities and help historically disadvantaged and currently under-resourced communities. When looking at who the initiative serves, we are reaching communities of color. When compared to the distribution of Oregonians with low incomes by race and ethnicity, the initiative meets the minimum goal of reaching African Americans and Latino communities. When we look at the geographic coverage, IDA savers live across the state, with accounts in the last three program years being opened in 32 of Oregon's 36 counties, hitting both rural and urban communities. When we look at incomes, more than half of our participants are living on extremely low incomes or very low household incomes, which is less than 60% of their county's median income. And nearly 7 in 10 of our savers are women. I have the unique 16 years of experience with the Oregon IDA initiative through a variety of different ways, including being a participant and working for two of those partner organizations that provided IDAs, and now overseeing this powerful resource for our state. As a saver, it began for me in 2003, my junior year at Oregon State, go Beavers, and I opened up an education IDA. I was required to take a financial education with Willamette Neighborhood Housing Services, and I was instantly hooked. I found myself regurgitating and talking to my friends, my family, anybody who would listen to me about what I had learned during those classes and the coaching that I got. About how managing my finances, about the importance of savings, about how credit worked, about building assets, and about how this real life-changing impact, the real life-changing impact this program had on me, including helping me find my passion of giving back, of creating opportunity for others. It has truly changed the trajectory of my life, and my sincere hope is that this opportunity will be made available to many more of my fellow Oregonians. I strongly encourage you to support House Bill 3133 and expand the opportunities that IDAs afford our state. Thank you for your service on behalf of Oregon, and I'll turn it over to Janet. Great.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, members of the committee. My name is Janet Bird, and I'm Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships. As you heard from my colleague Carlos, we are a statewide nonprofit organization. One of our tasks is to administer the Oregon IDA initiative. I'm just going to talk briefly about what the bill covers. I submitted a one-pager into testimony as well as my written testimony, so I won't read it all to you. I just want to hit some highlights. So the first request in House Bill 3133 is that the tax credit authority in the initiative be doubled. It's currently $7.5 million, and we're asking that it be doubled to $15 million. We've been essentially flat funded since 2015 when the credit was renewed. You'll hear from some more savers, and you'll hear from one of our partners. The initiative is really overstretched for resources. We have waiting lists, some partners for many, many years, and we know that we could be reaching many, many more partner organizations and many more individuals. The second thing that we ask for in the bill is to change the percentage that we're allowed to market the tax credit at. So right now, the tax credit is limited to 70%, which means that for every dollar that we receive from a contributor, we authorize 70 cents in state tax credit. That means it's been wonderful. We've been able to raise essentially $1.45 for every dollar of state resource, and we have really aggressively marketed. We've used auctions and other tools to market the credit to keep that percentage as low as possible. Because of changes in the federal tax code and subsequent changes in IRS regulations, that is going to be difficult to do. And so we're asking for permission, we're asking for authority to offer up to dollar for dollar value on the tax credit. We assure you that we will do everything in our power to keep what we're offering to donors as low as possible, but we need the authority to, or the ability to adjust that value, or else the marketing is not viable and it would mean the end of the initiative. And I'm happy to answer questions about the specifics of that. The third thing that we're asking that's kind of a major change is that we're asking for the ability to accelerate the savings match. So right now in statute, we are limited to $3,000 for every 12 months that a saver can accumulate in match. Our home ownership partners in particular are asking that we be able to double the amount of match to $6,000 a year or $3,000 every 6 months. There are some other kind of minor updates to statutory language. Some of it has to do with the demise of a federal program, which is referenced in statute. Some of it is in 2015 when we added new savings categories for the IDA initiative, we didn't update all of the language. So you'll see those spelled out, removing outdated references, update references to the uses of the range of uses of IDA accounts. One other change is the statute right now very specifically spells out how to calculate net worth for purposes of checking people's eligibility. The way it's written in statute is confusing. What we're asking is that net worth calculation be done in administrative rule, and that we would do that with Oregon Housing and Community Services and our network of partners to make sure that we had something that was a little bit more elegant and streamlined and workable. We're not asking for a change in what would be eligible for net worth. Excuse my voice. I'm having a little trouble with my throat today. And then the final change is to modify language about the uses of home repair IDAs. Right now, statute has very specific references back to language about visitability and accessibility. And that language is very precise and unnecessarily limiting for our partners, and they're finding it burdensome to be sure that they're complying with every bit of those statutes. So we're asking for a shift in that language. You will hear from several savers who can talk to you about how they've used IDAs, and you'll, I think, understand why we're so excited about this program and so interested in seeing this preserved. And I'd be happy to take any questions now or at the end of the presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you. And I hope you don't mind a little teasing, but we appreciate the shout out for the beavers. But given the composition of this committee, others in their testimony might want to mention the Mountaineers, the Vikings, the Hawks, or the Wolves. Just might help. Next up, I'd like to hear from Terrace Howard and Maria Clemente Medina.
Terrace Harned, ma'am. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Can you spell that, please?
H-A-R-N-E-D. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Not a problem. All right, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, Vice Chair Findlay, and esteemed representatives of the committee. Good morning. My name is Terrace Harned. When I was 17 years old, my mother passed away from cancer. For a long time after that, I was without a home. And for many years, I was without housing. The two are different, but at one point, I was sleeping under an on-ramp near the Memorial Coliseum in Portland. I was diagnosed as bipolar at 28, and at 34, I was finally approved for Social Security disability, which helped me get off the street. over 2 years ago, I met the love of my life. Last year, I proposed, and she accepted. March 14th of this year was our two-year anniversary, and the 15th of this year, I turned 40 years old. I'm sorry, this is actually why I was asked to speak. I get very emotional about this. She is my home, and together one day we hope to own a house. This is a concept that 5 years ago, neither of us would have imagined possible. Now, thanks to the Oregon IDEA Initiative, in just 21 more months, it will be a reality, less if this bill passes. I receive $806 a month for my disability, just under that from a part-time job. Some months I have to donate plasma to make ends meet. We scrimp and we save to pay our rent of $1,300 a month in Clackamas, Oregon. $1,300 a month. It's more than most people pay on a mortgage. Without the match savings, it simply wouldn't be enough. With housing prices being what they are, it will still be difficult. This program also required us to take a budgeting class that taught us how to find the money we needed to save. Because of the tools and knowledge that this class gave me, I've improved my credit from 610 to 705 in less than a year. Okay. Katie has also come up dramatically. Because of the Oregon IDEA Initiative, we have something that neither of us dared imagine having, just hope for a better future. If that's not the very spirit of the American dream, I don't know what is. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Maria Clemente. I am originally from Mexico. My parents migrated to the USA looking for better opportunities for me and my siblings when I was very young. So I grew up here in Oregon. Ever since I was very young, I witnessed that limited medical care in my community. I witnessed unnecessary suffering and pain. Due to these experiences, a desire to become a nurse grew deep in my heart. I dreamed to someday become a nurse to help people with limited medical care, especially mental health care. I knew that education was going to be a key to be able to make a difference in my community someday. Unfortunately, my family could not afford to pay for my college education. In addition, I became a single mom at a very young age. This and being an immigrant in this country, my financial opportunities were very limited. However, deep inside, I knew that someday I'll be able to continue with my education. The first time I heard about the Individual Development Saving Account, or IDAs, was back in 2016 when I enrolled to a wonderful program called Transiciones at Mentor Community College. This program helps Latina women to prepare for college and career planning. It was really like a dream come true when I heard about this program. IDEA would allow me to save for college education by providing matching funds. But IDEA didn't just help me save for college. It also taught me how to how to better and manage my finances, build a budget by providing me with the training to teach me how to learn to improve my financial skills. I am grateful for IDA program because it provided a great stepping stone that helped me return to college to pursue my career dream. I am currently a pre-nursing student at Manhattan Community College, where I have a few classes to complete, and then I will be ready to apply to the nursing program. I am proud to say that I have worked hard, saved for my college education, provided for my son, and earned a 3.8 GPA at Manhattan Community College. My final goal is to become a psychiatric nurse practitioner and work with communities with low income and that have very limited access to mental health. I want to give thanks to all the people that contribute and work for IDAS to be possible. Without these type of programs, my goal probably wouldn't be as close as I am to complete my goal.
Thank you, everyone, for your testimony. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you both. Stephanie Sosa, David Rose.
All right, first I'd like to thank the committee and all of its members for taking the time today to hear my story. My name is David Rose. I'm owner and operator of Rose Contracting and Painting, a small business based out of Marion County. I'm speaking to you today to express my support of House Bill 3133 and the future of the IDA program moving forward. Before becoming an IDA graduate in 2017, I considered myself as a fly-by-the-seat contractor in my trade. I started my business in 2009 and never had a good understanding of how to create a foundation to build on. I felt like Rose Contracting and Painting was never established in the community, and after being incarcerated in 2015 and losing everything but my business license, I learned about Mercy Corps and its IDA program. One of the first things I did after my release in 2017 was apply for the program. I was accepted shortly after. My life circumstances and others in the program were not exactly the same, but similar in some ways. First, we were all small business owners wanting to be successful for ourselves, our families, and our communities. All of us needed a little help or a lot of help in different directions, which the IDA program offered through business plans, marketing, credit, and law. They have a number of professionals in different areas of business to guide you along. Second, the IDA program showed me and others that building a team was a key factor in becoming successful, giving us the resources to mentors and other professionals in our trade. The third similarity, other than the knowledge side of things, was that we could all use a little capital, which the IDA program offered through its Saver initiative. Being able to save money and contribute to your business can be quite a task for a small business owner. With most of our money going to everyday bills, such as housing, vehicles, family, it's hard to get ahead and be able to invest in things you normally wouldn't. For me personally, the IDA program at Mercy Corps helped me to build that solid foundation small businesses need. I used the money granted to me after graduation to rebrand Rose Contracting and Painting, acquire tools needed to grow. My credit score has risen almost 200 points. My debt decreased to almost nothing, and my gross income last year was around $250,000. Over the last year, I have donated labor to nonprofit organizations and plan on doing so more in the future. The IDA program was a blessing from God and the state of Oregon. Please vote yes on House Bill 3111. Thank you to the committee for your service. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Ward Sosa, owner-operator of Island Girls Lunchbox. I have had the pleasure of serving on the board for the Oregon Food Truck Association here in Salem and organizing a number of food truck events that donate to local nonprofits such as the Boys and Girls Club and the Willamette Humane Society. I am here today to support House Bill 3133. IDEA plays an important part to entrepreneurs throughout the state that are part of their program to save and match funds for the startup of a business, a first-time home buyer's purchase, or for a student to work towards their degree. I have had two IDEAs in my lifetime. One was for the purchase of my home, and the second was for the startup of my business. I'm a single mother on a single income, and with the help of IDEA, was able to pursue my dream and leave a state job to be a full-time business owner. After 4.5 years in business with Island Girls Lunchbox, I am in the process of launching a second business. It is a great resource, and in these times where the cost of living and commercial space continues to increase, people have a program such as Merit and IDEA that can help them through with launching or growing a business, which contributes to the growth of our state as well as our communities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you both.
Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not a question, but perhaps more of a comment. First of all, thank you. That testimony is powerful. I appreciate all of you that have testified so far. I actually have experience working with IDEAs through the Eastern Oregon University Small Business Development Center, and they're a great success. The one thing I wonder is, as we consider these increases and these allowances, I wonder if there's a way that we could tie that small business development help that you receive, the business plan development, in with the SBDCs a little tighter, because the legislature is putting millions of dollars to fund SBDCs, but the business plan development that's occurring is not occurring through SBDCs. And so I wonder if there's a way we could strengthen those and create a stronger synergy. Just a thought, Madam Chair.
Thank you for raising that topic. LRO, you're making a note of this. Thank you. Anything else?
Great job.
Thanks. Next, could we have Sean Cleave? And that will be followed by Karen Sachs.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors in support of House Bill 3133. It's been my pleasure to work with Ms. Bird at Neighborhood Partnerships and to learn more about the Individual Development Account Program. In 2008 and first introduced in 2017, we brought forth the first-time home buyer savings account, which this body took action on in the short session in 2018. That bill was modeled based on the housing portfolio of the individual development accounts, and there's really not much you can say in opposition to the bill. It's a public-private partnership which helps the state save money. It's exceptionally effective. It has been demonstrated through the information that Ms. Bird has provided, which is in OLIS. The individuals that you've heard of today demonstrates that it has a long-term and lasting effect on the individual's ability to save and create long-lasting stability for themselves and their families. And with that, I will close my testimony and provide any answers to questions you might have.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Karen Sachs.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, and members of the committee. My name is Karen Sachs, and I work at NEDCO and Willamette Neighborhood Housing Services, two nonprofit community development and counseling agencies that merged as of January 1st. For over a decade, we have been members of the network of agencies that provide individual development accounts, education, and counseling for families on the path to building assets. Our mission is to serve low and moderate income Oregonians to increase their financial security and build assets. We serve clients across four offices covering six counties, including Lane, Lynn, Benton, Lincoln, Marion, and Clackamas. IDAs are one of the greatest financial resources we see in helping families obtain and maintain financial stability. When paired with education and counseling through agencies like ours, IDAs make a powerful impact in the lives of families. They help us build a comprehensive suite of services for our clients to achieve both short and long-term stability, creating resilient families and communities by building financial health. IDAs play a powerful role in our services, having the distinct benefit of intersecting many of our lines of business. They were a widely applicable tool, and the savings habits and knowledge gains through the IDA program have a long-lasting impact. In 2015, NEDCO opened the Polk Apartments, dedicated for youth aging out of foster care. We paired this housing with support services, but it wasn't until 2017 when we piloted IDAs for our residents that I would say the light bulb really clicked for the youth. We adapted the traditional savings goals, paring them down to a more manageable amount based off what the youth could save, and launched a youth financial wellness course. As you can imagine, the IDAs were and continue to be a big hit. Youth are saving for a vehicle, for their education, and even for first, last, and deposit for their next housing opportunity. We've had youth working through their first IDA and already setting their sights on what their second could be. We believe in the positive impact of IDAs in stabilizing families and communities, helping create lifelong savers who are better prepared to weather the road ahead. IDAs build powerful assets, and we see financial behavior changes at all different stages in the life of a low-income Oregonian. We see these changes firsthand, from the folks who start a small business to increase their income, to the high school kids who start saving for their college, all the way to the families who receive the keys to their very first home. Support for HB 3133 will continue to make this the reality for our neighbors. At NEDCO and Willamette Neighborhood, we are committed to the pursuit of asset building and witnessing the vital role that IDAs play in creating more resilient families, neighborhoods, and communities. We thank you for all that you've done to support low-income Oregonians and urge your continued support for HB 3133. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you. I'm going to ask a few.
Oh,
then.
Yes.
I've been focusing on listening to the testimony and not reading the written material. If you've already submitted this information to us, I apologize. I haven't read it yet. What can you tell me about what NEDCO, or now the merged organization, what can you tell me about the numbers of people who you have helped to get into housing, maintain housing, or purchase a home? And the reason I'm asking about this is for the last Legislative Assembly, and for this Legislative Assembly also, it's very important to us. We recognize the need to address affordable housing, workforce housing, as well as transitional and emergency housing and so forth. So I am interested to understand how many people you've already helped, how many more you anticipate you could help, so this would, in a way, be able to show keeping people out of that possible stream of homelessness or moving from place to place, which ends up costing a lot more because of those deposits that you have to pay and some of them you don't get back and so forth.
Yes, Chair Nathanson, it's a great question. So NEDCO typically, on average, we usually help at least 100 first-time homebuyers gain housing in a given year. The IDA program is a vital piece of that. So helping clients save and get financially stable and mortgage ready. As you mentioned, we're facing a rental market that is severely burdened. Costs are skyrocketing. People are having a very hard time saving for a down payment to move along that housing continuum. So the IDA is a really key piece in helping stabilize those families to take that next step. The IDA program also does a brilliant job at dovetailing in with other down payment assistance programs that we're able to access through Oregon Housing and Community Services to really help very low-income people stabilize and get into that asset building, that wealth generation through their first home. We really see that homeownership is the single greatest way that Americans build wealth. And right now, as you heard earlier, there are wait lists. In Lane County, NEDCO's wait list for an IDA is close to 2 years. We know that we are prepared and ready, and the demand is there, that with the increase in resources, we would be able to deploy that immediately, and that's just speaking for us, but we are, like you heard as well, we are part of a network of agencies that cover all parts of the state, and everyone is ready and poised to do that. Rep. Smith's question earlier around small business development centers, that is a lot of what we do as well. We partner with other community resources, such as a local small business development center, to ensure that our clients are getting the best information and the best coaching, the best development to really ensure both their long-term and stability for whatever asset that they're choosing to move forward with.
So I'm going to follow up. You mentioned 100. That's NEDCO alone. I wonder, we could multiply that by a few if we consider programs around the state. I don't know what that number is, but it's something a lot bigger than 100. And again, it might be in materials submitted by Janet Byrd or others. I'm wondering if we look at the unmet need and what you would be able to do to help in the future, do you have any guess how many people we might be able to help statewide?
Chair Nathanson, it's a, again, it's a great question, and I would definitely like to follow up with my team, but I think that, I mean, it's an exponential growth from that 100 number, because it is a resource conversation at this point around, we have clients who have put in the hard work, who are financially stable, who are mortgage ready, and they're facing a market that is just not allowing their entry. So we really do believe that number could grow exponentially very quickly.
Great. So when you do have some information, could you just please provide it to the Legislative Revenue Office?
Yes.
And they'll make sure it's available for all of the committee if they want to
certainly
see it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
And finally, the last to sign up is Edith Rush.
Good morning. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Marsh and Findlay, for the record, I'm Edith Rush, and I am a volunteer with Tax Fairness Oregon. And I know that all of you are quite familiar with our work, that we typically look for the bills that really affect tax policy, most frequently focusing on what it means for education. So I will say at the outset, when I was asked to really examine this bill, I did my homework, and quite frankly, sitting here in opposition to this bill is a very difficult thing to do. It's particularly hard to do it first thing in the morning. essentially, as I looked at this program and all the information you are seeing here and the stories of the individuals who are participating in it, there is absolutely nothing that I can criticize about this program. This is an outstanding program, and it does the kind of things that I personally, as an educator, really believe in that strengthens a state. It's a value-added program. But I'm looking at it from the standpoint of tax policy. And the thing that really struck me when I read the 2018 tax expenditure description of this program, there was a statement in there that really caught my attention that I'd like you to think about. That tax policy, that tax expenditure report says, because the credit remains at no more than 70%, the credit provides more resources than a direct expenditure. House Bill 3133 would change that. Basically, by allowing 100% deduction, you affect Oregon's tax liability laws. So, what I would say is if the tax effect, the tax credit doubling were not a part of this bill, there would be nothing that we would object to at all. There are lots of things in this bill that have to do with how the program is set up and what their needs are. I would say there are a couple of statements that were made this morning and last week in the Senate hearing on a similar bill. One that caught my attention was, we are overstretched for resources. Another one basically looked at it, this being a good funding mechanism because it provides year-to-year revenue stability. And for those of you who are working on education funding, healthcare funding, those are the phrases that you would hear over and over and over again. Essentially, over the years as I've testified related to tax policy, a stable revenue stream is a consistent phrase that I use, particularly when talking about the effects of Measure 5 and Measure 50 related to our current tax structure. So I'm going to share a story with you this morning, too, because I would say listening to the stories from all the individuals who have testified to you so far has been a deja vu moment. I basically got to be a part of this body in a very unusual way in the early 90s when I was a graduate student at the University of Oregon. I'm the duck in the room. My advisor decided that I should take a class on policy by volunteering in Senator Frank Roberts' office. And it was the year when he was trying to figure out how to implement Measure 5. And I would tell you that the reason this was a deja vu moment, every hearing that I attended for that entire session was filled with people in overflow rooms telling the stories that you were hearing this morning. And the thing that was interesting about it is, as Senator Roberts tried to educate me, Oregon at that time, before Measure 5 was passed, was known nationwide for its social services. And all of the people coming in telling stories were recipients of those social services, and they had all made their lives better. And Senator Roberts said, basically, once this goes into effect, he said, we will not recover from this for decades. So let me translate that a little bit to why this applies to the notion of tax credits. After all these years of following this, in fact, leaving the state for 20 years because my profession was affected the most by Measure 5, basically, it looks to me as though tax credits have actually become a workaround or a way around a healthy and sometimes very contentious debate about the relationship between state priorities, one of which this program fits into, and our tax policies. It's easier at this point, and I respect the work you do on and the contentious debates you face when you go back home. Over the last 30 years, tackling tax policy and what the effects have been on the things that you care about in this state is not an easy task to do. And it's one of the reasons as we look at these bills very carefully, basically, using tax credits to fund important programs really allows that debate to continue to be pushed aside. So I would caution you as you look at this. I have one colleague who observed last week that tax credits turn the tax code in Oregon into Swiss cheese. I'm not so certain about that. The IDEA initiative, as it right now stands, will continue to do laudatory work without doubling basically up to a $15 million. That's $15 million. That's not going into the general fund. And 98% of the people who take advantage of this tax credit are people who are making over $98,000 a year. So it's our most prosperous, our citizens who are prosperous enough that are choosing to take advantage of this. And it is an advantage. But at the same time, our general fund does not have those monies for you to make decisions about all of the state priorities, one of which should be a program like this. So I'm imploring you to develop tax policies that support stable revenues for all the state's worthy causes, one of which is this. At that point, then the IDEA initiative could count on stable funding because it was a direct expenditure, just as our education system, our health system, our transportation needs. So thank you very much. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question that I'd like some information from LRO down the road, which is the interchange between the 529s, for which we have a proposal, and IDAs, and how those different funding mechanisms complement each other.
Thank you, Representative. There's no one else signed up to testify for this bill. Is that correct? Yes. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3133. And I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3237. Again to you, Mr. Easton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3237 is a measure that would create a personal income tax credit in the amount of $1,500, and that credit is available to taxpayers who are employed for at least 6 months during a tax year at a certified child care facility that has a rating of 3 stars or higher with the tiered quality rating and improvement system. Terms are defined in the measure, and the credit would be available in tax years 2020 through 2025.
It's like the end of these
Thank
driven
you.
Allergies is like double attack.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, and Vice Chair Marsh. For the record, my name is Representative Sherry Helt, and I represent the beautiful city of Bend. I really want to thank you for allowing me to have this hearing today on this bill. This is an extremely important issue in our state as well as in my area. Oregon is in a child care desert. And what that means is there are more children that need child care than there are slots available. And in Bend, what that looks like is there are 8 children for every child care slot that is available. One of the huge pressing issues that cause this is a workforce issue. The typical range for a child care worker, their salaries range from $28,000 to $31,000 a year. These are very low wages with very high demands. There's a lot of education requirements that need to go into this because we want our child care workers to be very educated to give the best child care service that they can give. And with these low wages, it's hard to retain workers, keep workers, attract workers. And so in order to keep our parents available into the workforce, we need to make sure that they have child care providers that can afford to do the job. One of the ways that I think we need to do this is by making sure that we have a child care tax credit, because this will get more money into the pockets of the child care workers without raising the cost of the child care itself. And as child care goes up, we price out people as well from the system. And so I worked with my early learning hub on developing this concept and this bill, because they are very concerned about the level of education required, the amount of people that are being able to be retained in this workforce, and just the viability of our businesses if we don't have the ability to have childcare to make sure that everybody can work that needs to work. And so this is a really important bill because of those reasons. And I think it's a really good option of a way to get more money into the pockets of our child care workers without increasing the cost of the child care itself. I do believe that we do need to address the child care costs, or the wages as well, but this bill will at least try and do this without increasing the cost. And so it gives value to our child care workers and lets them know that we appreciate them and get some money into their pockets while we address the real cost drivers and issues. So thank you very much. I appreciate your time and listening to this bill.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to hear from Danelle Romaine.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Danelle Romaine. I'm here today representing the Bend Chamber of Commerce. And unfortunately, our subject matter expert could not be here today. She's ill, the CEO of the Bend Chamber. So I'm going to quickly read her testimony, which is concise. On behalf of the Bend Chamber of Commerce, representing 1,300 members with over 25,000 employees of diverse industry and size, we extend our support for House Bill 3237 to create a specific tax credit for workers at child care facilities rated 3 stars or higher with quality rating and improvement system. Like many parts of Oregon, Bend is in dire need of child care. Our region is growing rapidly, but child care providers are not, resulting in the designation of a child care desert. According to a study by OSU and Portland State, only about 3,000 childcare spots are available for the 9,000 children who need care in Deschutes County. Two-thirds of our area infants and toddlers do not have access to a regular spot in childcare, which has obvious impacts on the working families that make up Central Oregon's small business and entrepreneurial economy. The Bend Chamber is working on this complex issue on multiple fronts with many community partners to address this tough issue. Childcare workers have a high levels of education and certifications, yet they only earn an average of between $16 and $18 per hour. We need to support these workers through other means, and this small tax credit is a needed tool in the toolkit for solving this issue. So we appreciate your consideration of House Bill 3237.
Thank you. Questions? Thanks. Next, Marcia Kelly. And Marcia will be followed by Dana Hepper.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Marsh, and Vice Chair Findlay. Marcia Kelly for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. To my left, we're going to have more of an expert testimony. I'm just going to give you a few things to think about the bill, and then I think Ms. Hepper will finish out with a lot more detail. Some of the concerns that we have is policy by tax credit, that by doing a tax credit that people may or may not be able to utilize because it is not refundable is not necessarily going to help low-wage workers. In just looking at openings in the Mid-Willamette Valley area, someone with a BA in Corvallis might start at $12 an hour in an Oregon preschool promise. That would be $24,700 a year. But this tax credit is available if you only work 6 months, which would address giving a tax credit to maybe the turnover in the industry, but I'm curious about why it would only be 6 months. It's our policy that tax credits that are targeted that will help low-income workers are something like the earned income tax credit, increasing the earned income tax credit, and giving those people who are probably looking for childcare more money in their pocket to be able to afford childcare, as well as giving income tax credits through the earned income tax credit to the people who are taking care of those children might be a better way to look at it. So we frankly think that just creating tax credits that feel good but don't necessarily create a good policy is not the way that Oregon should go as we are searching for a stable tax system that we have not addressed in the last 30 years.
Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Dana Hepper. I'm the Director of Policy and Advocacy at the Children's Institute, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Child Care Coalition, which includes Family Forward Oregon, Children First for Oregon, AFSCME, SEIU, Oregon Center for Public Policy, Fight Crime, Invest in Kids. I think that's the group. We're actually testifying neutral, but raising some concerns about this approach. We really appreciate and are passionately working to address low wages of childcare workers. This is an Oregon issue and a national issue. Oregon childcare workers earn about $10 an hour on average. If they're providing care out of their home with their own children, they're earning more like $5 and a half per hour on average. This is an urgent issue, and we really appreciate Representative Helt in raising this issue in front of this body and attempting to tackle it. Our challenge is that we don't see tax credits as the most direct effective way to tackle that the wage issue among childcare workers. Tax credits are inefficient in a couple of ways. One, they don't come until the end of that tax year. And if you're earning $5 to $10 an hour, it would be more effective to have something that's helping you each month pay your bills. And if a tax credit is non-refundable, as this current approach is, then I think it's particularly challenging for it to impact the lowest wage workers, and childcare workers often fall into that category.
Instead, we'd love to see direct subsidy of wages to childcare workers. There's a national model called Wages, where the S is like a dollar sign, that is a proven, tested approach to increase childcare wages, correlating with increased access to professional development opportunities and education. And we think that can be a strong model that Oregon could look at moving forward. We also just know there needs to be a really big, deep look at childcare in Oregon and the lack of affordability for families across the state, many more families who are even eligible for the childcare subsidy program. And we're concerned that tax credits undermine our ability as a state to have enough general fund dollars to tackle programs like the childcare subsidy program that can help childcare workers, families, and children access high quality childcare. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Thank you both.
That concludes the list of everyone signed up to testify on this bill this morning. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3237. There is no other business for this committee. We are adjourned.